Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 18th, 2025. Interim Strides Director and Democratic Chair vie for Supervisor. Third applicant disqualified due to outside residency. City of Champaign Township Attorney Thomas Yu says that the town board will have two candidates to choose from when it appoints a new township supervisor next month. Strides Shelter Interim Executive Director Charlene Murray and Champaign County Democratic Chair Mike Ingram. A third candidate also applied but was disqualified. We informed LaMetra Kelly that because she does not reside in the City of Champaign Township, she does not meet the minimum requirements, Yu said. In addition to being a township resident for at least 1 year, each candidate must also be a Democrat and a registered voter in the township, Yu said in a previous memo. Additionally, they must not have been convicted for any infamous crime, bribery, perjury, or other felony. Applications to fill the felony closed Tuesday night. Yu said at a previous township board meeting that interviews will be held at the board's January 6th meeting. I propose that no later than the following Tuesday, January 13th, we nominate and appoint the township supervisor. Because again, the deadline is the 17th, so we're cutting it close, he said. Former Supervisor Kyle Patterson, who came under fire for his performance in recent months, cited ongoing health issues when he announced his resignation in November. Deputy Supervisor Corinne Jordan is handling the supervisor's administrative duties while the post is vacant. The new supervisor will serve the remainder of Patterson's unexpired term. Yu said Patterson was elected in April to a role he was originally appointed to, meaning that his term ends in May 2029. Murray told the News Gazette that she previously applied for the position in 2024 when a new supervisor was sought, amid Andrew Kornstrom's decision to accept the position of Champaign Fire Chief. However, she decided to withdraw when she learned that someone with more political experience had applied. My focus was on the success of the township and our community, so it felt appropriate for me to step back and allow someone to step in to that position who I thought knew it well, she said. I have now worked under two township supervisors and realize this role isn't about politics. It's about being a visionary, overseeing operations, managing finances, and being an engaged leader for staff, administration, and community. It's about ensuring that Champaign vulnerable community members have access to essential services like assistance programs and connection to community resources. She said that if appointed, her goals would include stabilizing and improving the shelter, partnering with the city and University of Illinois to address the housing crisis, repairing the township's relationships with both its board and the community, and better communication and support for township employees. Murray stated that she'd like to hire an executive director to continue executing a revisioning plan at Strides and has someone in mind for this position. The News Gazette also reached out to Ingram but had yet to receive a response at the time of writing. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline Cotton Candy Skies and the caption, "A sherbet-hued sunset graces the sky above a field of melting snow Wednesday southwest of Champaign. Today's weather forecast for Champaign County calls for a 100% chance of showers, a high temperature of around 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and strong gusting winds. Check out more of our photographer's work on Instagram." Operation Honor Guard, taking up his late father's cause. Country singer Blake Shelton in his video for Operation Honor Guard. Country music superstar records video on behalf of Danville Nonprofit. During this season of giving, it's not very every day a well-known country singer leads his support for a Danville Nonprofit. Over a matter of weeks, Operation Honor Guard president and founder Rich Darby landed the big voice of Blake Shelton to bring a lot more attention to his 12-year-old organization. A video of Shelton released Wednesday on social media as the superstar talking about how the Honor Guard impacted his family when his father died. My father served on the Honor Guard during the Korean War and took great pride in providing the burial rites for fellow soldiers. When he passed away, the Honor Guard stood tall for him, folding the flag and playing taps. It was powerful, and I'll never forget it, Shelton said in the video. But the thing is, Honor Guard units come across America are struggling, and that's why I'm asking you to support Operation Honor Guard. Your donation helps provide uniforms, training, and equipment for volunteer Honor Guards across the country. So every veteran receives the final military honors they earned, he continued. Shelton added, if my dad were here, he'd tell you this is worth supporting, and I'll tell you the same. Those who want to give back can visit the website OperationHonorGuard.us. Shelton asks people to give what they can. Shelton notes that the volunteer honor guards do it out of love, not for pay, and they rely on supporters like us to keep going. Darby, who was a longtime funeral director, started Operation Honor Guard after noting how the volunteers in his hometown unit need help to replace mismatched and worn-out uniforms. The organization has raised $4 million to date for veteran service organizations providing military funerals for fallen veterans. Its mission is to outfit every Honor Guard in the U.S. Honor Guard members often pay for their own uniforms and gear, and many even pay their own travel expenses. Darby said the need actually is $4 million a year, and he's hopeful large corporations and others hear Shelton's heartwarming message and take action. The Danville nonprofit receives requests from Honor Guards across the country for assistance. The video was a quick turnaround by Shelton. There were only a few email exchanges between Shelton's management company at Starstruck Entertainment in Nashville to make it happen. Darby had conducted research and discovered Shelton's father's background in serving in the Honor Guard in Korea and having an Honor Guard at his funeral. What a better ambassador than Blake Shelton, because he's so well-liked, Darby said. Darby said when he sent the first email request a couple of weeks ago, asking if Shelton would like to honor his father's legacy by sharing their mission, it only took 3 minutes to get an initial response. Someone told him they would forward the request to the management team. Then about 3 days later, Darby heard from Shelton's manager asking what Darby wanted Shelton to do. Darby said he gave them some options, and the next day they said they talked to Shelton, who said he'd love to do a video for the organization and post it to social media. Darby said it was funny that it happened so fast. He thought he wouldn't receive the video for a month or longer. But Shelton and his team immediately got on it, even asking if Darby needed anything else from them. Darby, who didn't speak directly with Shelton, said the video appears to have been shot in Las Vegas, where Shelton has residency shows. The video highly impressed Darby, who said it was wonderful when he first saw it. The quality of the video was like a television commercial, he added. He said it was more than he could ever have hoped for. Darby said the video already is making a difference in seeing all the new followers for Operation Honor Guard. It shows the power of Blake Shelton, Darby said. His management team has just been amazing to work with, Darby said. Anything, they were so timely and hospitable, I can't say enough. Darby said it's a tough time for donations to come in so close to the holidays. However, by having Shelton share his story, it gives my organization more credibility. We have a country music star that will get behind this, Darby said. Darby hopes more donations will come in, and he can use the video to show larger corporations. I got this guy behind us now. Operation Honor Guard's Day of Giving annual fundraising event will be May 13, 2026. Peoria Charter, CEO, debt filing will not impact bus service. Interest rate jump on pandemic-era loan gets blame. The leader of a regional charter bus company says that it's business as usual despite a recent debt restructuring. We're in the middle of our northbound winter break operations right now, said Peoria Charter CEO James Wang. Over 8,000 University of Illinois students are leaving campus on our buses throughout the span of this week. We will be bringing them all back in January. Wang told the News Gazette that the company has filed for Subchapter 5 of Chapter 11 solely due to a steep interest rate increase on a $5 million loan that was taken out during the pandemic under the federal government's Main Street Lending Program. We have good flex cash flow, he said. We can afford our overhead and we can afford all our bills and operation costs. Never had a problem with that. We've had a profitable year, so no, there's going to be no change to our service, our quality. No change in staff, at least not because of the loan, not because of filing. The company said in a recent announcement that daily routes continue to operate on their regular schedules. All confirmed charter trips will run as scheduled. Tickets for upcoming travel are still available for purchase, and Peoria Charter continues to provide quotes and accept bookings. In discussing the pandemic era loan, Wang said that the interest rate was initially 3.1%, and it rose to 8.44% in just over a year. Our game plan to pay it off was no longer feasible unless we stopped operating, and so former owner Bill Winkler sold the company to me in October of 2024, after he made me CEO. He was older and wanted to retire, and he made it clear to me what I was up against, Wang said, adding that he promised Winkler he would get the now 85-year-old business to 100 years. Wang brought in additional partners, and the ownership team spent the first year looking at possible solutions, including taking out other loans. However, the group has yet to buy the real property that goes along with the business, so they didn't have much collateral to offer banks. The business also reached out to many government officials about its plight, but all to no avail, he said. The loan was written in a way where there was no language for extension for refinancing. It was just flat out, you have to pay it when it balloons, and our loan ballooned on December 11, 2025, Wang said, adding that several other businesses are facing similar struggles. At this point, there is about $3.1 million left on the loan, and the company has also paid $1.5 million in fees and interest, he told the News Gazette. This is not what I wanted to do during my first year as the CEO of the company, Wang said. It's not what I wanted to do as an employee that's been working for this company since 2011. However, he also feels it's his responsibility to use every available tool to support the company along with its employees and customers. He also noted that Subchapter 5 process is a much shorter period of restructuring than a typical Chapter 11 filing. In order to qualify, companies must have a good payment history, and there is also a debt limit of $3.4 million. Wang said that Peoria Charter has a stellar track record when it comes to making payments on time. We don't have any long-term debt with any of our creditors other than this Main Street loan, he said. We're profitable, we're healthy. Peoria Charter was previously in the news in July 2024 after the university's Division of Intercollegiate Athletics abruptly ended its two-decade partnership with the firm. Wang said that while the company misses the DIA's business and would welcome the opportunity to be their carrier again, it has filled that gap and the loss did not impact our bottom line at all. Teacher of the Week is Stephanie Trueblood, third grade Spanish dual language, Yankee Ridge Multilingual Elementary School, Urbana. For Stephanie Trueblood, making students feel like they belong has always been a priority. That's one of the reasons she became a dual language teacher and a bilingual literacy interventionist during her 9-year career in the Urbana School District. Last year, Trueblood made the move from Dr. Preston Williams Elementary School to Yankee Ridge Multilingual Elementary School when the district unified its dual language program under one roof. She also coaches Urbana Middle School's cross-country teams. I find my work important because I help them become a better version of themselves as a student and as an individual through language development and a love for reading. I became a teacher because I want to provide students with a welcoming, open, and accepting space where every student feels included. With the experiences I had, I decided to be a leader in a classroom where all differences are appreciated and celebrated. I became a Spanish dual language teacher because I wanted to continue using the Spanish language as it is part of my heritage and part of my identity. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is within the unit, how do we protect our rights and freedoms? We have powerful discussions and learn about people who advocated for what we have now and those who continue to make their voice heard. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I go on a different adventure each day. I get to see their development as bilingual individuals and help them as they strengthen their abilities. I see past students in middle school and high school succeeding in doing what they love. I keep students engaged by incorporating technology and games into learning. Something else I'm passionate about is being a coach. I love coaching cross country. After teaching all day, I meet my runners at Urbana Middle School for practice to train for our 2-mile races. Being able to run and chat with them is a highlight of my day. Above all, I get to see their growth as runners as they drop their times at meets and get personal records. Their joy and energy is contagious and keeps me motivated. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mrs. Morrell and Mrs. Fox at Mount Zion Junior High. Mrs. Morrell was so engaging with grammar and reading. Mrs. Fox was not only an amazing math teacher, I currently love teaching math to my students, but she also coached. She encouraged me to start cross country in 9th grade. I would not have joined if it wasn't for her. She impacted me more than she will ever know. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a detective or a children's author. I spent my summer running with kids, training for a triathlon, reading novels, and spending time with my husband Zach and son Ezra. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Notes from the newsroom. Thanks to the hundreds of high schoolers, as well as their families and friends, for visiting our newsroom to take part in 10 all-area photo shoots this fall. We gathered our final teams, volleyball and football, on a snow-packed Sunday that saw a fantastic turnout despite miserable travel conditions. I love it when kids receive recognition for all their hard work, said Dixie Enos, who made the slow drive in from Oakwood with her all-area son Walker. We weren't going to miss this. Health insurance hope. 4 Republicans defy party leadership to force a vote next month on a 3-year extension of ACA subsidies. 4 centrist Republicans broke with Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday and signed on to a Democratic-led petition that will force a House vote on extending for 3 years an enhanced pandemic-era subsidy that lowers health insurance costs for millions of Americans. The stunning move came the same day that House Republican leaderships pushed to passage a health care bill that does not address the soaring monthly premiums that millions will soon endure. Those premium hikes will occur because the tax credits for those who buy insurance through the Affordable Care Act expire at year's end. The development set the stage for a renewed intra-party clash over health care in January, something Republican leaders have been working hard to avoid. The moderate Republicans were able to force the issue by signing a petition led by Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York to vote on a bill that would extend the subsidies for 3 years. Republican Representatives Brian Fitzpatrick, Robert Bresnahan, and Ryan McKenzie, all from Pennsylvania, and Mike Lawler of New York, signed on Wednesday morning, pushing it to the magic number of 218. A vote on the subsidy bill will come as soon as January under House rules. Unfortunately, it is House leadership themselves that have forced this outcome, Fitzpatrick said in a statement. Johnson told reporters Wednesday that I have not lost control of the House and noted that Republicans have a razor-thin majority that allows a small number of members to employ procedures that would not usually be successful in getting around leadership. These are not normal times, said the Louisiana Republican. The revolt against GOP leadership came after days of talks centered on the health care subsidies. Johnson had discussed allowing more politically vulnerable GOP lawmakers a chance to vote on bills that would temporarily extend the subsidies and would also, while also adding changes such as income caps for beneficiaries. But after days of discussions, the leadership sided with the more conservative wing of the party's conference, which has assailed the subsidies as propping up a failed program, widely known as Obamacare. House Republicans pushed ahead Wednesday on a 100-page-plus health care package without the subsidies. Instead, the measure focused on long-sought GOP proposals designed to expand coverage options for small businesses and the self-employed. The bill passed on a mostly party-line vote of 216 to 211. Representative Thomas Massie, Republican Kentucky, joined with Democrats in voting against it. Fitzpatrick and Lawler tried to add a temporary extension of the subsidies to the bill, but were denied. Our only request was a floor vote on this compromise, so that the American people's voice could be heard on this issue. That request was rejected. Then, at the request of House leadership, I, along with my colleagues, filed multiple amendments and testified at length to those amendments, Fitzpatrick said. House leadership then decided to reject every single one of those amendments. As I've stated many times before, the only policy that is worse than a clean 3-year extension without any reforms is a policy of complete expiration without any bridge. Lawler, in a social media post, similarly said that the failure of leadership to permit a vote had left him with no choice but to sign the petition. I don't like them. It's not the way it's supposed to work, Johnson said of the discharge petitions. Jeffries, for several weeks, had called on Republicans to sign his petition. He particularly challenged Republicans in competitive congressional districts to join the effort. They were really wanting to prevent steep premium increases for their constituents. Our position from the very beginning was that we are standing on the right side of the American people who want to see the Affordable Care Act tax credit extended. We're appreciative that we now have the bipartisan coalition to get that done, Jeffries said. The GOP holds a 220-213 majority in the House, which means defections from just a sliver of the conference can upend leadership's plans. Johnson has been able to negotiate that challenge largely by making accommodations to the more conservative wing of his conference. This time it was the moderates who revolted. The defectors largely represent districts that Democrats have targeted in their bid to retake the majority, with Democrats promising to make health insurance costs a central issue in next year's midterms. Lawmakers turned to discharge petitions to show support for inaction and potentially force a vote on the House floor, but they are rarely successful. This year has proven an exception. The vote requiring the Department of Justice to release the Jeffrey Epstein files occurred after Massey and Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat, California, introduced a petition to force a vote on the Epstein Files Transparency Act. The signature effort was backed by all House Democrats and 4 Republicans. It was a long battle to get 218 signatures, but once the magic number was reached, lawmakers in both chambers voted overwhelmingly for the bill. Even if the Democrat subsidy bill were to pass the House in January, which is far from assured, it would face an arduous climb in the Republican-led Senate. Republicans last week voted down a 3-year extension of the subsidies and voted an alternative that also failed, but an encouraging sign for Democrats, 4 Republican senators crossed party lines to support their proposal. Senate Majority Leader John Tooney, Republican South Dakota, argued against the Democratic extension as an attempt to disguise the real impact of Obamacare's spiraling health care cost. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican North Carolina, said he viewed the House developments Wednesday as a positive to generating a compromise that both parties could support. If we're not talking, we're not making progress. This continues the discussion, Tillis said. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said the 218th signature for the Democrats' bill showed that the demand from the American people for an extension is undeniable, but the damage has now been done no matter what happens. Because at this point, Republicans have made it impossible to prevent many Americans from paying more on their monthly premiums on January 1st, and Republicans can't even say that they tried to stop it, he said. White House display of partisanship. Trump uses new presidential walk of fame to throw shade on his predecessors. President Donald Trump has affixed partisan plaques to the portraits of all U.S. commanders-in-chief, himself included, on his presidential walk of fame at the White House, describing Joe Biden as sleepy, Barack Obama as divisive, and Ronald Reagan as a fan of a young Trump. The additions, first seen publicly Wednesday, mark Trump's latest effort to remake the White House to his own image, while flouting the protocols of how presidents treat their predecessors and doubling down on his determination to reshape how U.S. history is told. The plaques are eloquently written descriptions of each president and the legacy of they left behind, White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt said in his statement describing the installation in the colonnade that runs from the West Wing to the residence. As a student of history, many were written directly by the president himself. Indeed, the Trumpian flourishes include the president's typical bombastic language and haphazard capitalization. They also highlight Trump's fraught relationship with his more recent predecessors. An introductory plaque tells passersby that the exhibit was conceived, built, and dedicated by President Donald J. Trump as a tribute to past presidents, good, bad, and somewhere in the middle. Besides the Walk of Fame and its new plaques, Trump has adorned the Oval Office in gold and raised the East Wing in preparation for a massive ballroom. Separately, his administration has pushed for an examination of how Smithsonian exhibits present the nation's history, and he's playing a strong hand in how the federal government will recognize the nation's 250th anniversary in 2026. The broadsides against his predecessors dissipate the farther back into history the plaques go. And while Trump spared most deceased presidents of harsh criticism, he jabbed at one of his regular targets, the media, this time across multiple centuries. Andrew Jackson's plaque says the seventh president was unjustifiably treated unfairly by the press, but not as viciously and unfairly as President Abraham Lincoln and President Donald J. Trump would in the future be. With two presidencies, Trump gets two displays. Each is full of praise and superlatives. The greatest economy in the history of the world, he calls his 2016 Electoral College margin of a 304 to 227, a landslide. Trump's second term plaque notes his popular vote victory, something he did not achieve in 2016, and concludes with, "The best is yet to come." 900.6 billion-dollar defense bill heads to Trump. The Senate on Wednesday easily cleared the fiscal 2026 defense authorization, readying the mammoth $900.6 billion measure for a presidential signature. The final vote on the House-Senate compromise was 77-20. The almost 3,100-page bill calls for spending $8 billion more than the $892.6 billion that President Donald Trump requested and an earlier House-passed bill endorsed. The House passed the completed measure on December 10th. If Trump signs it, as he expected, it will become law for the 65th consecutive year. The NDAA helps us align the priorities of the U.S. military with the threats of today, and they are serious, said Roger Wicker, Republican Mississippi, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, during floor remarks Wednesday, citing serious threats from the president's Republic of China and the entire axis of aggressors that it leads and partners with. It also includes language aimed at restricting U.S. exports of critical technologies to China and limiting Defense Department use of end products or supplies and components sourced from China. In recent days, some senators have criticized the inclusion of a provision that would change rules regarding military training flights near Ronald Reagan National Airport. Courier Cafe closed until further notice. The Courier Cafe will be closed until further notice, ownership announced on Facebook on Tuesday afternoon. On Wednesday, a following post clarified that the temporary closure is due to an issue with the brick facade on the south side of the building, which was discovered Tuesday. At this time, we do not know the scope and severity of the issue, the business wrote. Due to structural concerns and out of an abundance of caution, we made the decision to temporarily close until this issue is resolved. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 18th, 2025. Please stay tuned for Part 2.